It's The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Let's go back two decades now to Congress, 1995, where lawmakers from both parties in the U.S. Senate voted overwhelmingly to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem.
I want to say at the outset that the sponsors of this legislation do not want to undermine the peace process. We support the process of building peace in the Middle East.
I would argue that although the disposition of Jerusalem may be an issue in the peace process, and of course it is, the location of our embassy is not. The location of an American embassy is entirely an American decision.
You heard former Majority Leader Bob Dole there, and also Barbara Boxer of California, a Republican and a Democrat. Congress passed the Jerusalem Embassy Act, but not before giving the president an out, a waiver authority to delay the move to Jerusalem, even permanently. No one wanted to upset what was a peace process at the time. Well, now President Trump is vowing to move that embassy, and some of those very lawmakers who once voted for the move say now it's not the right time. So what's changed? Scott R. Anderson is the David M. Rubenstein Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution.
At the time, the Oslo Peace Accords were ongoing between the Israelis and Palestinians, and it brought a lot of attention to issues in the region. The legislation was introduced as an effort to push the Clinton administration to relocate the embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. Specifically, it would have withheld funding from the State Department if it refused to do so. The Clinton administration, however, raised several objections to this. On a policy grounds, it was concerned that raising the issue of Jerusalem at that stage would put a halt to the negotiations or complicate them. The parties had agreed to hold the status of Jerusalem a highly controversial topic until the end of the negotiations. The Clinton administration also maintained that the statute itself would be unconstitutional and an interference with the president's exclusive foreign relations and recognition authorities. Before this reason, Congress responded to these concerns with a compromise that added a waiver provision that effectively allowed the president to delay the move of the embassy at six-month intervals. This brought over enough votes for the bill to pass with overwhelming bipartisan support.
Well, let's talk about that waiver a little bit more, Scott, because it seems like when the waiver was negotiated, and it remains today, that might have been kind of an escape hatch, you know, a way for lawmakers of all stripes to vote to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and not have to worry about it actually happening. Is that right?
That's certainly one possible read of the statute, Todd. The provision gives a lot of discretion to the executive branch. There was debate at the time the legislation was being considered as to the scope of the waiver, the conditions under which Congress thought it was appropriate for it to be used, but the views on this were conflicting among various co-sponsors of the bill. The plain language of the waiver really gives the president a great deal of discretion in deciding the conditions that would lead them to postpone moving the embassy.
And that law is still in use. Look, the president has announced the embassy is going to move, but this could be a years-long process, could be a four-year process. We don't even know if President Trump would still be president if the embassy finally moves. Do you think this is likely to actually happen?
It's hard to judge at this point, Todd. You know, we really have a lot to see what the administration's next steps are. The administration in President Trump, in his statement, drew a careful line. He very vocally recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital, satisfying a campaign promise and the demands of many supporters of that move for many years. However, he also was explicit in that he refused to take any position on the boundaries of Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem and made clear that those boundaries would have to be resolved between the parties through final status negotiations. And this is an important caveat because much of the international community views East Jerusalem, which Israel acquired control of in the 1967 war, as occupied Palestinian territory. And the Palestinians have stated their intent to have East Jerusalem as the capital of a future Palestinian state. So this question of where the embassy goes could bear in on that question of what is the scope of sovereignty that the administration is currently recognizing in Jerusalem. Therefore, it could prove to be a controversial issue.
Scott, let's step back for a second and talk about that controversy. Why is this so contentious in the first place, where the United States has its embassy? Who cares?
Well, as a matter of general practice, the United States only places its embassy in locations that it recognizes that territory as being within the sovereign control of the country who the embassy is to. So there are concerns that placing that embassy in Jerusalem would be a sign that the United States recognizes Jerusalem as part of Israel's sovereign territory. But this position of the United States has been for the last 70 years or so that Jerusalem is, in fact, disputed territory and that the status of it will have to be resolved through negotiations and that Israeli assertions of sovereignty over the city are inappropriate.
How many other countries have their embassies in Jerusalem now?
No other countries have their embassy in Jerusalem now. Some did until around 1980. You know, they had them in West Jerusalem. However, at that point, Israel's parliament adopted a law that asserted Israeli sovereignty over the entire city. And with the encouragement of the United Nations, those countries eventually moved their embassies out of Jerusalem entirely and to Tel Aviv.
You know, Scott, I've had this question for several other people. One way to interpret this move, maybe from President Trump, is the art of the deal, if I can just say that, that maybe the U.S. embassy won't ever move. There might be negotiations coming between Israelis and Palestinians, and maybe President Trump is just trying to toss a bargaining chip into the mix that the United States and Israel may be willing to deal away.
You know, the one point I would make here is that we've seen how strong the reaction has been to the mere suggestion that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. This move that the president has pursued has proven really controversial. It's already come at what seems likely to be a fairly heavy cost for the peace process, for regional stability. So I think the question has to be, how much leverage are you actually gaining, or what advantage is to be gained here? It's hard to see right now exactly how it sees this fitting into a process that will eventually advance the peace process.
Scott R. Anderson with Brookings. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much.
Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza take to the streets in reaction to President Trump's announcement on Wednesday recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Officials in the Palestinian Authority are being cautious, while Hamas has called for 3 days of rage in protest. Daoud Kutab is a Palestinian journalist and contributor to Al Monitor.
There are demonstrations today throughout the region. It's not just in Palestine. We have in Jordan alone, there's like 50 different demonstrations in Palestine. Throughout the West Bank and Gaza, there is a very loud and very angry protest. But also in other parts of the world, in Turkey, we've heard lots of protests. So this is not just a Palestinian issue, but an Arab Islamic issue of people who love peace and think that Trump's decision is not in favor of peace.
Protests across the Arab world. Take us inside the West Bank and even the Gaza Strip. How are Palestinians responding?
I think Palestinians are quite upset because what they have seen is that they knew that the U.S. administration was pro-Israel, but they were kind of taken with this ultimate deal idea. And now this ultimate deal has been unmasked and they see that the U.S. government is very much a pro-Israel position that they've always thought it was. And the hopes are gone. The hope of a two-state solution, the hope of the end of the occupation, the hope of the ending of the suffering, the hope of ending the travel ban. People cannot get into Jerusalem, which is where people like to worship on Fridays or on Sundays. You have to get a permit from the Israeli military authorities to actually enter into Jerusalem. So unless you live in East Jerusalem, you cannot, if you're a Palestinian, you cannot enter Jerusalem without a permit from the Israeli military authorities. You need to get a permit to get in so that if you're a Muslim, to pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque or to pray in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre if you're Christian. But even to see friends and families, Palestinians really were hoping that they would have an independent sovereign state with East Jerusalem as its capital.
Will there be pressure on the PLO and Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority now to stop negotiating, or at least to not enter into new negotiations?
President Abbas is going to be under tremendous pressure not to follow through with any kind of talks with the Americans. You know, Mike Pence is supposed to be coming on the 19th of December, and already the Palestinians have said they will not meet with the vice president. So the Palestinians have basically are closing down the negotiations with the Americans because they don't really trust the Americans anymore.
Daoud, from your view, I just want to ask, why do you think President Trump would do this? Look, he's not the only American Republican who thinks the embassy should be moved, but nobody in the past has done it, even though the rhetoric has been there. And lots of Republican former ambassadors, foreign policy experts have said this is the wrong move. President Trump seems to be alone here. Why is he doing this?
Well, I can't really speak for why the Americans are doing different things, but it seems to me that he's following through with a kind of a promise to one single American Jewish donor, Sheldon Adelson, who is even much more radical than most Israelis, and instead of really looking what is the best interest of the U.S. You know, in his short speech, he made 21 references to Israel and Israelis and only 4 references to America. I mean, if you want to be the America First president, you have to think of what the interests of America around the world.
Daoud, talk about the way forward here. Even though the game has changed and the Trump administration has made this decision, someone will make a bid for talks, I'm sure, in the near future. So what is the way forward now?
I think the way forward for Palestinians and for anybody who's really interested in peace, people need to buy into an agreement. And in order to buy into this agreement, there has to be clear principles from the beginning. Is this about the end of occupation? Is this about a two-state solution? So I think for any new negotiator, Palestinians are going to now insist that the clarity of the roadmap is very clear. Everybody knows where we're going, what is the end goal before we start the negotiations.
Daoud Kutab, Palestinian journalist, contributor to Al Monitor. Daoud, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.